And be on the mic, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM. Worldwide on the free Odyssey app. Big doings of Virginia Tech football. I think we're past the shock and the awe here, and we're picking up the pieces. There's a lot going on, which is to say you need a football coach. All right, sure, lots of teams need a football coach. You need an athletic director to hire a football coach, and you need a funding plan to hire an athletic director to hire a football coach. You got a three-step plan here. I don't think any of these are necessarily easy either. I think that's the Virginia Tech dilemma right now is any athletic director worth his or her salt wants to know, how much money am I going to have to spend on football? Yep. Any football coach worth his salt wants to know, which athletic director am I going to be working for? How will they support me in resources? And Tech doesn't have the answer to either of those questions right now. But they have a plan. They're working on a plan. They have the makings of a plan. What was the phrase? There's a political phrase for a while there. I'm blanking on it. Fragments of a plan. No, I'm botching it.
It's something
like
that.
Pieces
of a plan. They'll come together eventually.
Pieces of a plan. Thank you. We have pieces of a plan. Here's Whit Babcock. He's the athletic director. And I say this is not to dunk on Whit, but this is just in the interest of accuracy. This is Whit Babcock. He's the athletic director of Virginia Tech right now, giving a press conference yesterday about all of these issues.
I also wanted to offer some clarification and relative transparency on our search process, which is in its preliminary stages. We will have a search committee with some internal staff support behind it. The committee will include members with extensive football experience and insight, board of visitors and campus representation, and executive leaders. As the AD, I will support and advise the committee during the process. The committee's collective expertise and strength will enable us to make the best decision for the next head coach of the Hokies. This will be a collaborative decision, and the committee voices will carry tremendous weight. We are confident our committee will make an outstanding selection, will be aligned with our board of visitors and campus leadership, and certainly alignment within our committee when identifying our next head coach. As far as the future strategic direction of our department, I want to point back to Dr. Sand's quote from the Sunday press release. The board of visitors and I are working closely with AD Whit Babcock to develop a financial, organizational, and leadership plan that will rapidly position the Virginia Tech football program to be competitive with the best in the ACC. The new framework for college sports will be fully established for next season, so this is the time to make a major move, end quote. I want to thank Dr. Sands, Amy Sebring and her team on campus, Brandon Hall, Ryan McCarthy, and Jay Pearson for the work they have put into a proposed plan to be reviewed by the board in the coming weeks, resulting from the presentation they received during the board retreat last month. Due to that timing, the work ongoing, and respecting the chain of command, I will not address any questions today after my remarks. That announcement will and should come from the president and board when appropriate. With additional financial support and new resources available to increase traditional and creative athletics revenue generation, I am confident you will soon see a modernized structure built for success in this rapidly changing environment of college athletics. More in line with a professional football type organizational structure on the football side of things, and from an athletic department standpoint, a structure and organization more in line with corporate business. It has become a $150 to $200 million annual enterprise after all. I and we will improve, evolve, and adapt to this new landscape successfully. I'm excited for this new era and the forthcoming initiatives and opportunities planned. We truly can make a major move, as Dr. Sands referenced. And finally, I want to acknowledge our fans, donors, and alumni. They have been absolutely amazing, and they are second to none. They have been doing their part, and then some, to will us to victories and success. And I sincerely apologize that we haven't stepped up yet and returned the favor with results on the field. The paradigm of the college football landscape has obviously changed, and we are better positioning ourselves for success to be ahead of the curve rather than chasing behind it. It's up to us to do our part as an administration and an athletic department to aggressively adapt, modernize, and invest to win strategically, and to reward this fan base in a manner that they deserve, expect, and demand, and we will do that.
All right, that's Whit Babcock. He's the athletic director of Virginia Tech, and he says he's not going to comment on this because the next announcement should come from the school president. You've got a lot of moving pieces here. At the end of the month at the board meeting, they're going to put the proposal in to spend $60 million a year on Hokie football. That's what they have to do to attract top talent. They're going to do it. But then once that's in place, I think Whit exits stage right, because I don't think there's a world where you want him hiring the next football coach. But also, it's football coach hunting season. So right now, and you kind of heard this, it's a who's in charge situation. He said the president and the board are leading the search for a football coach. And I'm not going to say that can't work. That can work. It's possible for that to work. What I'm saying is I prefer it if football people hire football coaches. That's a bias I have. It's an implicit bias I have. Mentioning ODU causing chaos over here. Okay, brief story. Richmond Raceway. They race once a year now. They used to race twice a year. Very big deal. 100,000 people, economic impact, out of town, blah, blah, blah. And so in my role at the newspaper, I'm coordinating coverage. And the fall race is always on a football weekend, right? It's a Saturday night race. There's college football. There's NFL. And it was always very important to the racetrack that they be the lead story in Sunday's newspaper above the fold, right? That was more important than, you know, we don't want the Redskins up there. We don't want Virginia Tech up there. Like, this is Richmond's big event. Is very important to them to be at the top. This is, I understand we were talking about old people things earlier. Like, where your story was placed in the newspaper used to really matter to a lot of people. And it was my job to make that decision.
Ooh.
And so it was my job to walk into the track PR office at 6 p.m. on race night as they're getting ready for their big event and say to them, did you see the football score? And they said, no, this isn't this one. This was the first of the three. Old Dominion beat Virginia Tech at football. And they all said, uh-oh. I said, just so you know, so you're hearing this from me and not waking up to it tomorrow, that's going to be the lead story in the sports section tomorrow, not the race. They didn't fight it.
Old Dominion's just popping balloons left and right.
Popping balloons left and right. The one year they got all the play they ever wanted was when the crazy fan climbed on the fence during the race. That made the front of the paper. That
you just need a little crazy.
Sometimes you just need a little crazy in your life.
I'm telling you. Chiefsaholic. He got front page. You know he did.
Chiefsaholic gets arrested. Robin Banks, wolf suit, all that.
Yep.
Team marches on, keeps winning.
Yep.
They're down. We're done. We're done.
This is where we draw the line.
The line had to be drawn. It's not Taylor Swift. It's not Travis Kelce. It's not Andy Reid's kid. It's not Chiefsaholic. It's none of these things. We can't survive without third down guy up there calmly telling everybody it is third down. We tried to inject some excitement into third down. It's over.
It's over. It clearly did not work. Pack it up.
All right.
We're
back,
done.
Back after this. Crosstalk in 15. You're listening to 910
The Fan.
910
The Fan.
105.1 FM. We're worldwide on the free Odyssey app on this Wednesday morning. Play Chesterfield was 1 hour ago. And if you missed it, it'll be on the podcast. You can find that everywhere you get your podcast. You search MP on the mic. Got to check in with Manchester. They're flying high 3-0 Lancer football. You can hear our game of the week Friday night right here. Gary Hess, Coach Chris on your home of high school football. Hokie football Saturday. Wofford, better beat Wofford. That's my take on the Wofford game. You better beat Wofford. It's a nice soft landing spot for the new coach. Philip Montgomery will be the interim coach for the rest of the year as Virginia Tech sorts out its funding plan to get an athletic director to hire a football coach. They've got time, but they've got a lot of work to do, and it's going to happen over these next few weeks and months. We'll follow along here on The Fan. It reminds me of when they fired Jay Gruden and they made Bill Callahan the interim coach. You always like... you need to make sure the interim coach wins his first game so it's not like, nah, we still stink. So they fired Gruden right before they were going to play the Miami Dolphins. And these were the Miami Dolphins who there was a literal lawsuit over whether or not they were tanking that year. And the answer probably was yes. I'm not a judge, but it does seem that the answer was yes. And so we go down to Miami. It's Bill Callahan's first game. Bill Callahan, of course, famous NFL coach, offensive line guru. He, like some interim coaches, and I think this would be Philip Montgomery at Tech, some interim coaches are like, look, we're going to keep the seat warm. We're going to make it through the season. We're going to try to stay together as a team. We're going to fight hard. Well, we're not shaking things up. Like, that's, you know, that's not your job as the interim coach. Some interim coaches, Bill Callahan, get the job and are like, we're changing everything around here. There's a little scoreboard at Redskins Park on the practice field, a little high school style scoreboard that was literally installed on Bill Callahan's first day as interim coach. He said, we don't have a scoreboard out here. We're putting a scoreboard out here. He changed the weight room. He changed the schedule. Jay ran what was called Club Jay. The players loved Jay because Jay took care of the players. So Thanksgiving week, they had the Thanksgiving game in Dallas. And so traditionally, after the Thursday night game, you're allowed to go do whatever you want for the rest of the weekend, as Dan Quinn did with his players. They rolled off like seven straight losses into that because they were a really bad team. And the week of Thanksgiving, Callahan told him, you're not getting Thanksgiving off. We're coming back here and we're going to work. And this was like a 4-11 football team. It's a minor miracle he didn't die that day. I mean, I could not. There are 53 guys in that locker room. I could not get any of them to talk about it on the record, but 53 of them talked about it off the record.
Woo!
And had a lot of things to say about that decision to not give them Thanksgiving with their families because they were so bad at football. Bill Callahan had some ideas of how to run a program, but game one in Miami, he is set up for success. Jay Gruden has been fired at the correct strategic time. The interim coach will win the first game. The Miami Dolphins, who I remind you are literally tanking. And look, this was a bad football team on this side too. But they're winning. They're up 10. They look terrible, but it's comfortable. And for reasons I'm still unclear on, in the fourth quarter, the Dolphins coach pulls the quarterback and puts in the backup, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh, no.
And Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't play to lose. And he takes the team on his back and scores a quick touchdown. And they get a field goal real quick. They get the ball back real quick. They've got the ball. There's like a minute left. They've got to go the length of the field. And you're like, uh-oh, he's going to go the length of the field. 7-point game. What do you know? Just slices and dices his way down the field. Scores the touchdown. Flores does the correct thing, calls for the 2-point conversion. Ain't nobody trying to win to play overtime in this game. Miami against Washington, they're both very sorry football team. So the whole Bill Callahan regime is on the line for the 2-point conversion. And to this day, there is controversy over whether or not Miami called in a play that was guaranteed not to work. It didn't.
Oh,
but
interesting.
It didn't work. Yeah, they successfully tanked the 2-point conversion. As they successfully tanked the season, ended up with their guy, Tua. You don't always get what you wish for there on the back end of those things either.
You get what you get, though.
But that was a weird locker room because, you know, Dan Snyder's coming down, game ball, interim coach Bill Callahan, yeah, like rallying the troops, brighter days are ahead for this franchise. But in the back of your head, you're like, oh, no.
Oh.
Fitzy would have won that game.
Yeah.
If they had let him win the game, he would have won the game. Like, it's kind of a minor miracle. He didn't audible. I think he had known if he had, he wouldn't have been allowed on the bus back to Miami after the game. There was a lot going on that day at the old ballpark.
Woo!
That ended with Chase Young being drafted. That didn't work out well either. A lot of things happened that year. The Bengals got Joe Burrow. They ended up best of all, and now Joe Burrow's out for 3 months. If it's a true 3 months, I do think if they get to a position where they can make the playoffs, that could be a really dangerous, like, 6 or 7 seed. I'm missing from my vantage point how a non-Joe Burrow Bengals team is going to make it to 9 wins and get him in striking distance. Mm-hmm. If they could somehow find a way, they sneak in as a 7th seed, Burrow comes back healthy for the playoffs, that would be a story. I think it's far more likely they finish the season with 7 wins, the coaching staff gets cleared out, and the Joe Burrow sadness continues. That's a great... We talked about what-ifs earlier in small sample sizes. Like, there's also, where did you get drafted?
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady ends up in New England, finds Bill Belichick, coaches the crap out of him. They both turn each other great. Joe Burrow, unquestionably great, gets drafted to Cincinnati, a clown show of an organization, can't sign the rookie because they're fighting over contract language. Like, I think Joe Burrow could absolutely be great, great. Like, in the pantheon of greats if you put him on the right team. He's not the right team, though. So there's that. We got to do crosstalk with AWOD. We'll talk about Jaden Daniels as the Commanders take the practice field again today. They play the Raiders. Pete Carroll coming back to town to face Dan Quinn. They had some good times together. They had a rough Super Bowl finish together. Not the roughest Super Bowl finish Dan Quinn had, but certainly top two. We'll talk about all that on the other side. You're listening to 910 The Fan.
Hippie of the mic, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM.
We're worldwide on the free Odyssey app Wednesday morning in the world of sports. We'll get back to Jaden Daniels. We'll get back to Virginia Tech. Coaching search underway. Who's in charge? Who's the boss? We'll kind of answer that question. Whit Babcock did yesterday at his press conference. We'll get to that. We don't publicize this a lot, but we have interests outside of here. If you run into Hazel or myself in the real world, I mean, that's a little bit like running into the teacher outside of school. Like, what are you doing here? Don't you live in the studio?
We do live in the studio.
But we both have outside interests, it turns out. I run the Richmonder. This whole thing was just a setup to say richmonder.org, sign up for the email list. But Hazel also produces podcasts, like actual quality podcasts, and not just guy rambling about sports stuff, which is really cool as well.
I like them both equally.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's the nicest thing anybody's ever said to me. So introduce this one, because this the worlds have collided here.
They have.
Set up the clip for us.
All right. So I texted you last week because I work... One of the podcasts I do is called Tech Tank. It's with the Brookings Institute, which is like...
By the way, sorry.
Yeah.
I knew I would derail
Tell
you.
Tell me.
Tech Tank guy?
Yeah.
What a voice.
I know.
What a voice. He's putting my radio voice to shame.
Yeah. Yeah. He rolls along. He's got the little... Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
He's got it going. It's all right. We can all learn from him. But Tech Tank, as you might assume, is about tech, and they take big subjects and they talk to experts and blah, blah, blah. But last week, their episode was on AI in the NFL.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. Every moment of it was crazy.
That was really good.
Yeah, I had to reach out to you and say, let's talk about this.
I listened to it yesterday in the car, and I'm ready to talk about it. But I think for our audience, we're going to hit them with a clip here. Is that the game plan?
Yeah, I pulled it talking about how they're using AI this season in the NFL, talking about first downs and things like that.
Bring it.
Instead of the chain that measures 10 yards, there's going to be a new digital measuring device that will determine if there is a first down. How do you feel about that and perhaps other digital tools that could aid in determining whether there is a penalty in the game?
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating moment here where we're bringing Hawkeye into football even more so. So the technology evolved out of Paul Hawkins, who was an aerospace engineer, and he himself was a cricket player, very frustrated when he was called at what he thought was a bad call, what's called a leg before the wicket. So the ball hit his leg, but it was determined had his leg not been there, it would have hit the wicket. So he was called out. He felt that wasn't right. And being an aerospace engineer, he then developed this technology where using cameras and predictive tools, it says where the ball's going to be. Now, that got adopted into tennis, and we've seen some controversies, but on general, pretty rapid uptake. It's now been used in Major League Baseball in the preseason to call ball strikes. And so it's very interesting to see it brought into the NFL when it comes to the 10 yards of a first down. What's interesting is, of course, you know, historically, you had the umpire place the ball, and then these guys would run in from the sideline, plant the chain, and then march off 10 yards. So the chain is totally accurate to 10 yards, but the start point seems a little, you know, flexible, right? So now they're still going to have the umpire place the ball, so there'll be some controversy around that, but then the 10 yards will be to a high degree of specificity and without people running out. So there's still kind of some issues to argue about, which maybe makes the game partly entertaining for fans. Could imagine it gets frustrating for players at time.
Yeah, Kelvin, I'm sure there's still possibilities for measurement error in that process, but I'm curious how players feel about the new first down measuring tool and whether there should be better ways than human eyesight to identify penalties in a game, because that often is very controversial as well.
I mean, I think you have humans that are playing the game, so I think you need to be having humans that are evaluating the game. You know, for me, that's where I get, you know, skeptical of having too much technology in the game, because I don't think a robot or technology should be able to dictate what's going on within the game. I think it should be a tool that's helpful, but I don't think that that should be the guiding principle that's used to be able to evaluate whether a penalty is taking place or whether a first down is a first down. Use the marker if it's over the marker. You know, first down, if it's not, I understand. But I think that, you know, having the first down marker helps speed the game up, which is what they're trying to do. And I think that's more of the conversation versus, hey, this is very new technology that should be used for the betterment of the game. It's more, how do we speed the game up by not having to bring the chain gang out to make a decision? As it pertains to penalties, a penalty is a penalty. A holding is a holding. It's objective. Some, you know, refereeing crews call it a certain way. Others call it a certain way. But I think that's the human element that takes place in the game.
And I would say that's a kind of important part of the fan experience as well. You know, you cheer for your team and you want to kind of shout at the referee. So keeping some of that human element in the game is actually going to be kind of important to the future of football as well.
So, Arthur, I know there are several new stadiums that are being built, and I was wondering if you could give us
So that's the podcast there. And the whole thing's fascinating. This is right in my sweet spot. I love everything about this
discussion. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. So many great points all the way around. The one you heard there, which is people want to be mad at the ref, which I do think is true.
Yeah.
I do think is absolutely true.
He's right about that,
I think
sure.
He's very right about that one. The other one, which he made before, which I find fascinating and very applicable to football, and college football even more so, it is a small sample size sport.
Yeah.
In baseball, there's all the data points. We can say with, I believe, 99.9% certainty, the best baseball players in the United States play in Major League Baseball. And the next best are at AAA and on down. You can't say that in football. Because you think about the process. You know, a college kid, he's a freshman, he grows, he's a sophomore, he gets some time. He's got his junior year, he gets hurt. He's got his senior year, has a bad game, has an opponent he doesn't match up well against. He's nobody, he never gets drafted.
Mm-hmm.
What if he was actually really good the whole time? Like, that happens. Like, the draft in the NFL is the most random of all the drafts in sport. Basketball draft, that's why teams tank. You have to be number one in the basketball draft. You don't have to be number one in the NFL draft. You get a really good player late in the NFL draft. Tom Brady, classic story. Patrick Mahomes was not a top five NFL draft pick. All these guys who you consider the greats are not necessarily number one overall in the NFL. It's a small sample size sport. But then all the data that's suddenly available now and how they're going to use it. And you think about it, a human probably can't call plays as well as AI because you can't truly randomize. You're always going to have patterns that you fall back on,
mm-hmm.
whereas the AI would be unbreakable in terms of patterns, theoretically.
Allegedly.
Here's what I remember. I'm just going to talk with my stories over this podcast story because I prompted a flood of memory.
Let's go.
When they put the chips in the shoulder pads for the first time that year, I went at Zebra Sports as the company. So I went and met with them, saw the technology. So like, that's the future. Like, that's really cool. And you see it power a lot of the stuff and the next gen stats and all those things that we see in the NFL. So about halfway through the year, I'm chatting with a player at his locker. His name not important because this isn't about him. He's going to look goofy in a second, but not about him. It's about the team. I'm chatting with him in his locker, and I see he's got a printout that's like 30 pages thick with the Zebra logo on top.
Okay.
And I said, is that the data from your shoulder pads? He says, yeah. I said, can I see it? And I flipped through it, and it truly was just the data, how far he ran, when he ran, all that. And I said, what do you do with this? He says, I've never looked at it.
Yeah.
I said, wait, what do you mean? He go, well, they print it off and they give it to us. Do you know what this means? I don't know what any of this means.
Oh.
Right? And that there will be good teams and bad teams because there will be teams that use the information mm-hmm. and teams that just print out the information.
Yeah.
And the Washington Redskins were, well, one of those teams. Hey, data. Everybody's talking about data. Yeah, we got a data guy. What does he do? He prints it out and puts it at their locker.
Boom.
What do they do with it? They throw it away. They don't know. The data is not the thing. The thing is the coach who, or the analyst who can see the data and put at the guy's locker one page that says, here's who you're playing this weekend. Here's what they do. Here's how you beat them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the data, not the he ran 7.8 miles per hour.
Yeah. I think that so they've got Kelvin Beecham on the podcast here, and he was talking about the data and the shoulder pads and the cleats and your helmets, and you just have so much, and how players have to kind of for themselves fend for themselves unless the team has some data guy.
Yeah.
You know, they have to sort it out themselves. What does it mean? How do I benefit from this? And like the sheer amount of data that they're generating on themselves when they sleep, when they eat, when they train, it's just crazy.
It's too much data.
It's so much data. It's so much data.
It's also Chip Kelly was the original I'm going to use data coach, and Chip. He flamed out in Philly and everybody hated him, mm-hmm. which I think set data back a couple years.
Listen, he was my Oregon guy, so I'm not going to say anything bad here.
It's so fun. A lot of the concepts he brought to Philly were so right and so ahead of their time that we're rediscovering them now, 6 and 7 years later. But because the team rejected him and mm-hmm. hated him, when they lost, he got fired, and everybody assumed the he must have been using, like, oh, you can't just use the data. Still got to have the personal touch as well. Yeah. All right, one more to add on top of this.
Yeah.
This is like 7 years ago, okay. talking with an NFL guy. And he says, we're working on this thing. This is really cool. And he says, so it's an artificial field, right? Because almost all the fields are artificial now.
Yeah.
And the little blade, fake rubber blades of grass or whatever.
Yeah.
But they've got an LED at the top of each one.
Oh.
And so this... You're following.
I'm following.
So this technology they're working on where essentially the ball carrier gets tackled. There's a chip in the ball.
Uh-huh.
And it displays quite literally on the field where the ball is down.
Wow.
And can project the first down line too.
Huh.
So you can just see it, right?
Yeah.
Like the first down line just projects. They're an inch closer to that this year with the Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Which it's... one more story. This. I want to hear what you have to think too, but I also have a lot of stories because this podcast...
Let's hear it.
Howard Fendrick covers tennis for the Associated Press. We were talking one day and I was like... In the football box because he was doing a game... And I see, why can't we just have first down technology like they do in tennis? He says, the Hawkeye. I said, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, if you talk to the tennis players, they're skeptical about it. And that's the human element of it. Like,
yeah.
they think they know that the ball was in or out. They don't believe the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to fight that battle as well. What were your takeaways here?
The first down thing is interesting because the chain gang is so slow. Like, I see wanting to get rid of it, but it also...
It's very antiquated.
It.
But is it a charming antiquated or a bad antiquated?
Exactly. I mean, the LED field is so cool, but does that make it more of like a tech game, you know?
Yeah.
It changes the feel of the game a little bit, you know? But you could put logos on the field, I guess that's pretty cool.
Well, I'm sure there will be an advertising implication to that.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that at all.
You're so right. I don't know what I was thinking. Oh.
Like the NFL logo. No, like the Cheetos logo. No. I mean, come on now.
A Cheetos touchdown.
We invented a billion-dollar field. Why? To sell Viagra to people, obviously.
Yeah.
Come on now. Very cool. So is there a website for the podcast or what's it called?
Yeah, it's on the Brookings Institute. The podcast is called Tech Tank. We just heard that was hosted by Daryl West. He's got that great podcast voice.
But
Kelvin Beecham is the NFL player. He plays for the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. A current NFL player is... the Players Association meets and talks about data, which makes tons of sense. But I guess I was a little surprised. He was saying they give, you know, players standards like this is how you should use it and good luck. Because it just varies team to team.
You know where the Players Association meets. That's a throwback to the scandal. So the guy who got fired from the Players Association recently expensed a bunch of visits to strip clubs as meetings with players.
Yeah.
To talk about data.
First of all, where else would you talk about data?
Unclear to me. I don't know where else you'd talk about data.
Absolutely ridiculous. Not on the air, not on the radio.
Right here is where you talk about data. MP on the mic, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM.
MP on the mic, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM.
Checked in with Dan Quinn, coach of the Washington Commanders. Here's what he had to say to the media about Jaden Daniels.
starts off first on like the strength part of things, the movements, and that's step one, John. Then on the field, the change of direction, the pivoting, the moving, all of those would be the things to go. So we'll just take it, you know, as it goes, you know, through the week. But he'd have to see all of the steps, you know, along this week to hit those marks, the speed, the stopping, the change of direction, all of it.
And then you guys didn't have to deal with this this amount of injuries at one time last year. So what is it? What kind of a challenge does this pose for the team this week and going forward?
Yeah, I think teams go through it, John. It's just at different times, you know, with injuries and such. And so having this 70-man roster, you've heard me say it's going to take everybody. You know, it's even on the old days when it was just 53, that's not really how it goes. For those of us who've been around the league enough, you need a big, deep crew, and if players do have to miss, that's why we have this, you know, group and how we play. So we'll just take it as it goes. But, you know, it's a little bit of a puzzle. You have to put it together, much like other teams do, and we'll be prepared for that with the contingency plans at certain spots if we need them.
Hi, Dan. Is it, in fact, a knee sprain that he's dealing with, and was he hurt on that tackle in the fourth quarter with about 5 minutes left where he came up hobbling?
He was hurt on a tackle. He was actually looking back on Micah and scrambled away and got hit from kind of the opposite direction, I would say. But he is dealing with a knee injury. Like I said, it was good that he finished the game. And now as we get through it, we'll just kind of go through the whole process with him. And we're not going to miss it either, Nikki. With Jaden, we know how important he is. And so we're just going to kind of take it. That's why I truly say it's day by day. To make sure that he can absolutely be himself.
I think that's the big thing is, sure he can play, sure he wants to play. Is Jaden Daniels going to be able to do all the Jaden Daniels things? And there are times where it's okay to say he can't do all those things, but we need him, he's got to be out there. I'm going to tiptoe into heretical territory here because every game's important any given Sunday. I'm not sure week three against the Las Vegas Raiders, coming off of a late Monday night game where they played until 1 a.m., where they are traveling east to play a noon game or a 1 o'clock game, 10 a.m. West Coast time. I'm not sure this is the moment to say, all hands on deck. We need everybody. We've got to beat the Las Vegas Raiders. We need you, Jaden. What you got, 71%? We'll take it. Get out there. There's a time for that. At times against the Eagles, at times against the Cowboys. That time is in big games that will determine whether or not they make the playoffs. That time might be in Los Angeles against the Chargers. Chargers are good, sneaky good right now. That time may come. That time's not against the Raiders. Here's the other thing I'll say, that you hit me with your Al Pacino, you're any given Sunday. We're fighting for every inch out there. Good for you. I'm glad you're fighting for every inch out there. If you can't beat the Las Vegas Raiders with Marcus Mariota, this is not a legitimate Super Bowl contending team. And when you have Jaden Daniels, when you're good, I know y'all haven't been good for a while, so I'd like to talk to you about what it's like to have a good team for a minute. Because ask a Steelers fan about this. Ask an Eagles fan about this. They haven't been good, but ask a Cowboys fan about this. Packers fans, seasons are binary when you're good. You are in the Super Bowl or you aren't in the Super Bowl. It is a binary calculation. We have lived this charmed existence that we all hate living, where a 9-8 season can lead to applause and everybody feeling good because they've stunk for so long. We've lived this charmed life. They made the NFC title game last year and we did freaking cartwheels in here. Awad sprained his ankle. We were so excited they made the NFC title game. And it was true, because it had been so long since they'd made the NFC title game. But here's the reality. We're done with that. We're done with playing the we're happy to be in the NFC title game. It's binary. If you root for a good team, it's binary. Ask the Bills fans. Would you trade the past four decades of Washington football for the past four decades of Buffalo football? They've been to more Super Bowls. They've won more games. They've had more Hall of Famers. You got rings. You got Super Bowl rings. No, you wouldn't trade it. They're winners. Those Joe Gibbs teams were winners. They won Super Bowls. Of course you'd never trade. It's binary now. Figure it out. Figure it out on Sunday, because I need to know how invested I need to be the rest of the year. The other 52 guys on this football team, could they beat the Las Vegas Raiders? Because they should be able to. They are good enough, if you think you're a legitimate contender, to win this football game without Jaden Daniels. Call in. Tell me I got loser mentality. Tell me I'm not respecting the opponent. I'm just telling you, if they need hobbled Jaden Daniels to beat the Raiders, this is a deeply unserious football team that will not win the Super Bowl this year. Now, you could be good. We just figure out they're good, right? They're going to squeak by the Raiders, beat the Raiders 18-15 and everything. You know, whatever. Like, that's fine. But they win. And then you put Jaden on top of that, and then the thing supercharges, right? I mean, imagine the Chiefs without Mahomes. They wouldn't be very good right now. He's everything to them. And I think they are figuring out the same thing. When do you hit the reset button? Tom Brady went through this in his career. Tom Brady wins 3 Super Bowls. The core around him starts getting old, starts getting overpaid, and at a certain point, the Patriots had to say, we can't win the Super Bowl with this crew anymore. We got to blow it up. We got to bring young guys in, right? It's a little different in Washington because there is no core, and they're working towards building a core. The Chiefs are going to have to make that decision in the next 3 years, and if you hang on too long, it sets you back from maximizing the back half of Patrick Mahomes' career. He's going to have to walk through the wilderness so he can come out on the other side and win the Super Bowls on the other side. That's what you got to figure out on Sunday with Jaden Daniels. All right, AIMP's back after the break. Not the artificial one, but MP's going to talk about AI. It's a Wednesday. You're listening to 910
The Fan, 105.1 FM. Worldwide on the free Odyssey app. We call this next segment Crosstalk.
Two-host center.
Let's get it on right now, all right?
Two-host will also leave, but in between, all bets are off. This is Crosstalk with MP and AWOD.
Okay, okay, let's get this show on the road.
AWOD Radio, my guy.
Yes, sir.
Holding it down, noon to 3 every day, and keeping an eye on everything, too. Talking a little VCU basketball as we get ready for the season. Lots of hype behind that. But today is another Jaden Daniels day, because today is practice day in Ashburn. We'll see. I think we're all assuming he will be limited at practice today as he hits all the markers Dan Quinn has for him along the way. Here is my simple question to you. If Jaden Daniels does not play on Sunday, can they beat the Las Vegas Raiders?
Yes.
That's good.
They need to play 5 times better than they did against the Green Bay Packers.
Wow.
They cannot play the way they did against the Packers and beat anybody in the National Football League. They can't even play the way they did against the New York Giants and beat the Vegas Raiders. I think they need to step it up. I do think they need to score at least 24 points, which they haven't done yet this season, an offense that went off for 29 per game last year. They can win without him. It will take an overall much better performance from everybody.
Yeah, and in the first 2 weeks, there's been this, I keep going back and forth between two very good defensive fronts. Micah Parsons, obviously, Thibodeau and the Giants, they speak for themselves with their talent. But also, that's why they brought in this offensive line. This offensive line is here to ensure the quarterback has the time he needs. And it really, I don't think the moves were a bust. I liked the moves. I liked bringing in Tunsil. I liked using a draft first-round draft pick. But it feels like they haven't gotten the results we'd hoped for on the offensive
Yeah, line. I think it's a double-edged sword, because my gut reaction is, damn it, they should have played the starters more in preseason. But also, Eckler could have been lost for the season in preseason, right?
Yeah.
That's why you hold guys out, because you don't want to lose a major piece for the entire season. But yet, the first few weeks of the season now, the guys are playing like it's preseason, and so they just didn't have enough time to gel together. I think that's what you're seeing.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's enough margin for error for this team to be spending 3-4 weeks finding itself, especially when you have a team like the Raiders. Playoff teams beat the Raiders. That's what they do. I think this is an important game from that perspective.
Yeah, and also, look, the offensive line had their issues. The bigger issue was the offense as a whole going 3-and-out twice. Let's not act like that didn't happen last year at times.
Sure.
This offense, once they got that first down, was like the most incredible offense the NFL's ever seen. They were the greatest show on turf, right, with Kurt Warner. I mean,
yep.
When they got the first down, they got to the hurry-up offense, they went down the field, they would either get into the end zone or settle for a field goal or go for on a fourth down and get it. But there were times last year, and I look at the Ravens game, the Steelers game, and the first Eagles loss, that they went 3-and-out, because that first down for a team that likes to play fast with hurry-up offense is the most important thing.
Yeah, and this isn't a defense that can handle being on the field 40 minutes a game. You know,
true.
When you lose time of possession, this defense wears down, and there's just not the depth that you can throw a lot of bodies at it and be ready for it. Thursday night was brutal in the moment. A lot of injuries. Austin Eckler, Dietrich Wise. Then you wake up Monday morning, and it's Jaden Daniels. And now you wake up today, and Jonathan Jones is going to IR. I don't know how you even process just how bad that Thursday night game was in terms of they're not set up well for the rest of the season now because of that game.
Yeah, and a big part of the success last year was that Jonathan Allen was the only one that missed significant time.
Yeah.
The only player. Yeah, Eckler was out a few games. I think maybe B-Rob missed one, right? Noah Brown missed a couple. Everybody was healthy for the most part last year, and health plays absolutely into a factor for your record for the entire season.
Oh, no question about it. They were lucky in the health last year. They were skilled in other areas. It wasn't all luck, but they were lucky in the health last year, and they haven't had that luck this year, which I think you'd expect in terms of a quick turnaround. Awad joins us for a little bit of crosstalk. Our old friend Preston Smith back, though.
I like that.
I liked him when he was here. He was a classic Redskins draft pick, and everybody's like, he was a bust because he was never first round good, but he was always a solid football player.
Yeah, remind me, did he get paid to leave to go to Green Bay?
Yeah. His contract came up, and the team did not offer him a big contract because they felt he was...
But Green Bay gave him a decent contract.
Oh, yeah. No, he got paid well, and he produced well there, too. Which,
yeah,
I think
it was Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith.
I think it may have been more about this team and their schemes at the time and their talent at the time than Preston Smith. He never had a double-digit sack season here, I don't believe. Which, you know, first-round draft pick. Ryan Kerrigan's in town. There's high expectations for you.
He was probably better than maybe Brian Arakpo.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was just similar.
It's good to
have him back. But I think my bigger takeaway about why he's back is, and I talked about this during the game with you, I thought Javonte Jean-Baptiste was awful. I thought he was one of the worst players on the field for the Commanders. It felt like they were targeting him in the pass game, and then they were play-actioning, and he was not in the right spot a few times. He was number one on the depth chart, on the latest depth chart release that has come out and has Bill as the number one running back. I'm fine with that. Javonte Jean-Baptiste is a starting edge rusher. Yeah, we need to bring someone else in.
Yeah, I think there's a definite need for more bodies and more people, and we're still waiting for a Johnny Newton breakout game, too,
in
a lot of ways.
I got to look at the snap count. It feels like I haven't seen him on the field much.
Yeah, I haven't called his name much, for sure. There's just not enough production happening there, and you know, I hate to be that guy who says takeaways every time we do crosstalk. You need a takeaway.
Yeah.
You have to force a turnover.
It was an issue last year as well. And it's hard because you can play perfect defense and have zero takeaways. You're kind of relying on the offense to make a mistake.
Yeah.
So if they can't get a turnover this weekend, that's number one goal for sure. Number two, to stop teams in the red zone. You cannot let touchdowns happen. That was the reason Green Bay won that game.
Yeah,
it wasn't really the explosive plays or Micah ruining the game plan. It was the fact that when they got inside the 20, they got 6 points.
Yeah, they got the one stop, but it wasn't sustainable. It wasn't something that they did over. You know, the bend but don't break only works if you don't break, and they broke a lot. That said, it's the Raiders. They played Monday night late. It sure feels like they're not going to have time for a full game week prep. They're coming in. It's a 1 o'clock game.
We need to do what Green Bay did to us, right? I mean, is this the exact opposite scenario or what?
It really is. It's absolutely time to make sure that you take advantage of the opportunities you've got in the NFL. This is the best opportunity they'll have all year to catch a bad team on short rest when you have long rest yourself.
Yeah. The Vegas Raiders are going to come out. They're going to puff their chest out. They're going to get right in our face. We need to send them a Trent Williams punch right to the mouth.
Get Max Crosby ejected.
Yeah.
AWOD Radio, 3 hours, live and local. What you got cooking today?
Yep, it is time for the Bill Roth, Cowan Gates Hokies update at 1:30. Get his information on the new head coach and what changes they'll make, right? You change coaches from Brent Pry to Philip Montgomery. Will they make a change at quarterback, running back, or anybody on the defensive side of the ball? So Bill Roth for the Cowan Gates Hokies update at 1:30. Our buddy Gary Hess is off. Gary Criswell will join us at 2:15.
Coach Criz! Ah, that's a big win there, getting Coach Criz. They're off to a great start in their lineup. I think you got to just try Pop Watson in the sense of it's a lost season. Throw some stuff against the wall. We'll see what the Hokies do. We'll keep you posted. Hokies and Wofford, you'll hear it Sunday right here, Saturday right here on 910 The Fan. Commanders on Sunday, of course. We're back tomorrow. Grab the podcast if you missed any of this. You're listening to 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM.